Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 25th of February. We're going to talk Thursday edition, kind of all things political this hour. Robert Reich was to have joined us. He unfortunately can't make it today, but we're rescheduling that interview for next week. Don't you worry. We'll still be talking about all the candidates, and our guest will be Julian Zelizer, who's a terrific thinker and author, presidential historian, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. This does require some conversation, as Robert Reich has written, a 69-year-old billionaire who's never held elective office or had anything to do with the Republican Party has taken a commanding lead in the Republican primaries. A 74-year-old Jewish man from Vermont who describes himself as a Democratic socialist who wasn't even a Democrat until recently came within a whisker of beating Hillary Clinton in the Iowa caucus, routed her in the New Hampshire primary, and garnered over 47% of the caucus goers in Nevada, of all places. And just think about it, a year ago, the widely held belief was that 2016 would be a Bush-Clinton race. We're going to talk about all of that. We should also tell you that the new Marquette University Law School poll was just released, and it shows this, a tight race between Clinton and Sanders in Wisconsin. The poll showed Sanders with 44% support and Clinton with 43%. In January, it was Clinton with 45 and Sanders with 43. Donald Trump maintains a sizable lead. The new poll in Wisconsin shows Trump with 30% support, Marco Rubio with 20% support. So we'll break down those numbers with Julian in just a little while. But we do want to let you know that in addition to a presidential race, we have the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive going on right now. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Lisa Nalbandian is joining me in our Milwaukee studios. And you count on a political year like this, a presidential year. I know you tune us in, and we'd love to hear what your thoughts are on the race, as our guests do as well. So here it is. It's your place for political information. Your gift of any amount will make all of those discussions possible in the months ahead. Give now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552. All right, back into politics. I love politics. I was telling Lisa, I think I spend my whole life, I go home, I watch debates, I'm reading, I'm listening to, yes, I do, cable news chat shows across the political spectrum to hear what everybody's talking about. And what a year this has been. It's just been amazing. The Marquette poll, we'll ask Julian Zelizer to talk about that. This is a poll of the, well, it looks at the state Senate, too. I don't have the results on that. But the Marquette Law School poll just released recently finds a close race, very close race, between Clinton and Bernie Sanders. Sanders, 44% support. Clinton with 43% support. It was just the opposite. Well, actually, it was Clinton 45% and Sanders 43% in January. Donald Trump maintaining a sizable lead. We'll talk about him with Julian. New poll shows Trump with 30% and Marco Rubio with 20%. So Julian Zelizer is our guest. He is a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. He is the author of quite a few books, including The Fierce Urgency of Now, Lyndon Johnson, Congress, and the Battle for the Great Society. He's a regular contributor to CNN, The Atlantic, and The Huffington Post. And we are welcoming your phone calls. We'd love, I'm sure he would too, to love to hear what you're thinking about the presidential race at this very moment. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655 for you to join the conversation. Julian Zelizer, thank you, sir, for being with us again. Hi.
Thanks for having me. Hi.
I want to start, I was going to start with the presidential race, but the news at the top of the hour indicated that Governor Sandoval is out of consideration for the Supreme Court position. This is an unbelievable thing to put in the middle of a presidential race, isn't it?
It really was. I mean, first, there's just the obvious story about a Supreme Court justice passing away and a vacancy taking place, which just amplifies the question and concern about who will be president and the appointment power that they have. But then added to that was the announcement by Mitch McConnell that the Republicans wouldn't even consider someone until the next president was in place. So this has just been an unbelievable story, and I think it's raised the stakes and shown how important control of Congress will be, not simply who's president.
And does it play to a possibility of some Republicans getting turned off if the Senate will not consider the president's nominee?
It might. I mean, we keep saying that when there's obstruction, that at some point the obstructionist strategy of the Republican Party will cause some kind of movement within the GOP. But thus far, we haven't really seen it. While some Republicans grumble, there isn't any evidence that a significant number of voters are turned off enough to vote for a Democrat because of what they see in the Senate.
Bernie Sanders, let's talk about him for a moment. His stellar victory, you write, in New Hampshire showed that his campaign has some serious legs. Does it still have serious legs?
Yeah, I believe it does. I mean, he obviously lost in Nevada, not by a huge number. He won a big primary, and the first one was basically a tie. So Super Tuesday is going to be very important. He does need to win, you know, a good number of states or do very well in many of them to prove that he can actually take on Hillary Clinton. But again, whether or not he wins the nomination, which is still unlikely, he's had a big impact on the race. He shaped the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
He has shaken up Hillary Clinton's campaign, and I think he's brought in a large number of voters from different parts of the electorate who otherwise were turned off by the Democratic nominee. So the impact's already there.
Do you want to respond to this Marquette Law Poll, which is usually quite reliable? It just came out about an hour ago. It shows a change in support. This is still close to call, I would think. But Sanders with 44% support here in Wisconsin, Clinton with 43% in January, Clinton 45%, Sanders 43%.
Yeah, that's not surprising. We're seeing poll numbers in obviously Vermont is doing well, but Minnesota, Colorado, Massachusetts, Oklahoma, where this race is pretty close. So March can still very easily be a tough month for Hillary Clinton. And I think those polls reflect not just his support with younger voters, which has been discussed, but also with lower income voters who find some of his arguments appealing.
He has been painted by some as somebody who's out of touch. He's a socialist. His ideas are just, you know, pie in the sky. But you say that his appeal is really based on how mainstream, you use the word mainstream, many of his political arguments are. How are they mainstream, Julian?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the arguments, if you listen to his speeches today and separate who he was years ago, are making core arguments that a lot of Democrats support. So at one level, issues like single-payer insurance have a lot of support in the electorate if you look at the polls. And then many of his other arguments have become kind of basic liberal arguments about how government can help improve the lives of Americans, how government can help build the infrastructure, and how the political system is broken. Those are arguments that are not radical right now, and they have a lot of support. So I think he has crafted a campaign that has ideas that are much broader than someone who's quote-unquote just a socialist.
Mm-hmm. How do you explain so much has been made of Hillary Clinton's support among African Americans and how important that's going to be in South Carolina and many other southern states? Do you see that breaking at all, that support, and how do you explain it?
I don't think it's going to happen in South Carolina. I mean, there's no evidence she will lose that state. Part of it is the work that her husband and she have both done in recent years to court the African-American vote and to really try to speak to the issues that concern parts of the African-American community. Part of it, I suspect, is a political calculation. Again, the stakes are high, and I think there's a lot of nerves that, you know, if Democrats really went with a Bernie Sanders, regardless of what the ideas are, it would be a risky bet. And many people feel the Democrats can't afford to lose right now. To have united Republican government could be very costly for the African-American community and others. So mm-hmm. I think both are at work, and some of it is the Sanders campaign has just not done a good job yet reaching out to these constituencies.
I watch so much of this and listen to so much that I can't remember who said this, Professor Zelizer, or where I heard it, but I remember in the last couple of days, someone in South Carolina who may have been a legislator in South Carolina saying, I don't care, we don't care where she got her money. That doesn't make any difference. It's how she will help us. Is that true that there is a segment, and I wonder if you can break it down for us, of people who don't care about ties to Wall Street or money that comes from speeches to Goldman Sachs, et cetera?
Well, I think, you know, there's parts of the electorate that don't care about that. They liberal parts of the electorate who see that and they say, look, that's the political system we have. Mm-hmm. Business has always had a lot of power. So the real issue is within that framework of politics, which is not great, who's going to do the best to make advances? And there can be real advances still. And then there's others who are so cynical. They kind of think the whole system is broken right now. They remember Obama promising he would reform the system in 2008, and he didn't. And they're saying that, look, realistically, Sanders might be spot on with his arguments about Wall Street, but that's not going to be changed in the near future. So then the next question is who will have the best chance of operating in that system and achieving legislative gains. And for many people, you know, they turn to Hillary Clinton and they see a very strong legislative advocate of Democratic ideas.
We welcome phone calls from Professor Julian Zelizer. Please chime in because we got South Carolina on Saturday. Super Tuesday is coming up next week. We have the new Marquette Law Pool that shows Sanders a little bit ahead here in Wisconsin and Trump way ahead here in Wisconsin. We have yet to talk about Donald Trump. Is it true, as some have said, that Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump are both keying in on the angst that so many middle-class Americans and those who are poor Americans in this country just feel like they can't get ahead, that the recession has hit people so hard and that our incomes are not keeping up with the cost of living. And so both of those candidates are keying in very different ideas about what to do about it, but that's what's really making their campaigns fly. We welcome your phone calls. 800-486-8655 is our number, and let's take a call here, but we hope to take many during the hour. Jim in Rice Lake. Hi, Jim.
And I just want to contribute. This is an article I read online from the New York Times. It attributes to Donald, or compares Donald Trump to being like a modern day Andrew Jackson. And the analogy is that Jackson was a nativist and a populist. He wasn't morally strong. In fact, he dueled and killed a man in a duel before assuming the presidency. And he was such an extreme nativist that he ignored the Supreme Court rule concerning the Cherokee Nation in Georgia and marched them to Oklahoma, which is known as the Trail of Tears. Because he was an America First nativist. Now, Jackson had more significant accomplishments, such as his generalship in the War of 1812. But I found the article and the analysis interesting. I'd be interested in hearing your guest response.
Thank you. Thanks, Jim.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's been many articles that put Trump in a tradition, whether people are comparing him to Andrew Jackson with the nativism that existed when he was in power, or George Wallace in the 1960s and 70s, and the kind of racial appeal that he offered white Americans, sometimes explicitly, sometimes subtly, when he ran for president, when he was governor. And I think that is an element of what Donald Trump is about. And so while he might be interested in the same frustration that exists in the electorate as Sanders is and as Hillary Clinton is in terms of the economy, he plays to their worst fears and he plays to their ugliest sentiment sometimes to drum up support. So I think there's something to that. And he's very explicit about this. Certainly on the issue of immigration, he does not hide when he makes arguments about immigrants as this destructive force. And this is a trajectory that goes back to blaming Native Americans, blaming African Americans, and he's done it very effectively.
Professor Julian Zelizer is with us this hour, and we are talking about the presidential race 2016, and we're doing a lot of that during the course of this year, and I must say loving every minute of it. He is a wonderful analyst, and we've had him on many times, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. He writes frequently for CNN.com. He's a commentator on television frequently, writes for The Atlantic, Huffington Post, and is author of several books on presidential history, The Fierce Urgency of Now, Congress and the Battle for the Great Society. He wrote a biography of Jimmy Carter and other presidents, and he is with us this hour to analyze what's going on the Democratic side and the Republican side. And we'll be welcoming phone calls from you. Our phone number, 800-486-8655. Our pledge number is 888-202-2552. I know many of you love these kinds of conversations, and this is a Double Your Pledge Hour. We'll tell you more about that in a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Julian Zelizer is our guest, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University and a New America Fellow. He's the author of The Fierce Urgency of Now, Lyndon Johnson, Congress and the Battle for the Great Society. He's written a biography of Jimmy Carter, other books as well. And he's one prolific guy. He contributes regularly to CNN, The Atlantic, and other places. And we're welcoming phone calls on. We started with Bernie Sanders. We moved to Hillary Clinton. We went to Donald Trump, and we'll cover others during the course of our hour. Our phone number on air, let's hear your calls. What are you thinking about the race at this moment in time? 800-486-8655. And we have Celcia, is that how you pronounce your name, in Sun Prairie?
Felicia.
Oh, it's Felicia. Hi, Felicia.
Hi. So I wanted to ask your guest which of the candidates he thinks is the least likely to send more soldiers overseas or keep the war going on in Syria, and also which of the Republican candidates he thinks is the least pro-war, at least overseas.
That issue is most important to you, Felicia?
It is very important. Yeah, we have a lot of Syrian friends, and they have, like, really nice houses that have all been bombed within the last few months, and they don't know, like, which side is bombing it, and it's just really disturbing.
Yeah, it is a disturbing story. Professor Zelizer.
Well, I think clearly from the Democratic side, you know, Bernie Sanders is less eager to send troops anywhere and would be much less likely to get involved in a battle there, as far as we know. I mean, the one thing we do know is what people say in campaigns and who they are when they run can change dramatically depending on what happens overseas and what kind of political pressure builds. But right now, Sanders would be the most likely to avoid using troops or engaging in any kind of serious military conflict. And, you know, this is part of his appeal, I think, to some parts of the electorate. And with the Republicans, that's really hard to tell. I mean, I think generally, without, you know, Rand Paul being at the top of the ticket, most of the Republicans have expressed support for the use of military force. You could argue that John Kasich might be the most judicious before doing that, simply because he's more pragmatic politically and really thinks through what the cost, the financial and physical and political costs of using troops could be. But in general, it's a much more hawkish bunch.
We haven't talked too much about Donald Trump, and so let's do it. I don't know if I've talked to you much about him. It looks to me that he's the guy. I don't know how it gets stopped at this point. Do you, Julian?
It's difficult. He is, you know, the front runner right now, and he has won in a series of pretty decisive victories in different parts of the country, which I think is significant, in the West, in the South, and in the Northeast, which makes it look like there's something of a coalition forming behind him. So the time for one of these other Republicans to make a run for it is really diminishing. Super Tuesday, something has to happen with a Marco Rubio or John Kasich. And if it doesn't, it's harder and harder to talk about, you know, the moment when the non-Trump candidate comes back. And I think Ted Cruz has also really suffered in terms of the insurgent lane for the nomination. So I think he's in great position, and I think, you know, he is a politically savvy person. He's proving that.
I still don't quite understand, and please explain it to me. I thought the New Yorker had a really striking cover a little while ago. Abraham Lincoln was on the front, Teddy Roosevelt, FDR, and maybe Ronald Reagan were looking kind of askance at Donald Trump, you know, on television as supposedly the next president. There is so much crudeness here and lack of specific detail about how to implement policy or what the policy may be that I'm not sure what it is completely that people are buying from him. So what is it, Professor Zelizer?
Well, it's certainly not policy. And, you know, there was a very good article in the Times today about the distance between his ideas about a lot of policy and where the House Republicans are. And so, you know, it's hard other than immigration to see a very specific idea that he's been pushing that might be appealing. So it's partly attitude, and there's something that voters like about his defiant stance toward everything. And there's some attraction to a person who speaks their mind, even if they're saying things that are ugly and that are controversial. You know, part of it is a disbelief in Washington. It's not about him. It's about how the political system and process has been working. And they see him for all his flaws and problematic areas as something genuine. And finally, he's just good at television, and he's good at the media. And we can't discount that, you know. Not only was he a real estate mogul, he was someone very successful on television. And I think he has understood the way the new media works in a way that Jimmy Carter understood the way caucuses and primaries were working in the 70s and has used it to his advantage. So I think all of that is at work, combined with just appealing to the rage that exists in parts of the electorate.
Can you imagine him as president?
Very hard to imagine him
it
as
is.
President, and you don't really know what that would look like. But I think many people are starting to imagine it now and to try to figure out what that would look like, especially with a Republican Congress that might be more willing to support him than some people think.
And I'll ask you in a little while, what are the chances we'll do a matchup with Sanders and with Clinton to see who might win, what polls are saying now, and if you can believe in polls, too. Thank you, Felicia, for your call. We go to Claire in Madison next. Hi, Claire.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
I'm feeling the burn, but I will gladly vote for Hillary if it comes to that over any of these Republicans. But I have a sort of a complaint and a question for your guest. My complaint is Bernie is constantly being asked, how would you pay for all these programs, when on the Republican side, to my knowledge, for example, Cruz and Rubio have already said they would like to increase the defense budget, which is already so bloated and trillions of dollars, versus Bernie wants to help the whole nation and fix the infrastructure and the healthcare system, things like that that would help everybody. That's my complaint. And then my question to your guest, Kathleen, is what if it comes down to, in the primary, Bernie wins the popular vote for the Democratic side, and then Hillary ends up with more delegates? Wouldn't that just be the icing on the cake as far as angry voters in this nation?
Thanks, Claire, for your call.
Well, in terms of those are interesting points. The pain for the program, much of the complaint has actually come from Democrats, and it's from Hillary Clinton supporters who are not Republicans, and their main argument is that, you know, part of what the country needs is a more realistic assessment of, you know, what is being offered right now. And so they have launched pretty tough attacks, including many liberal economists who are saying that Bernie Sanders, his numbers don't add up, or if he does what he wants to pay for these programs, it won't be very palatable to a lot of Americans. Republicans, you know, they've talked about it a bit, but that's not been the thrust. But it's a fair point. I mean, it's not as if Sanders is the only one with confusing math on the campaign trail. And this is a critique raised about Republicans in terms of defense spending and tax cuts all the time. And it should be something that is asked and something that candidates are pressed to do. In terms of the second question, you know, that was something raised when Obama beat Hillary Clinton. And there were a lot of Hillary Clinton supporters who said, you know, she was doing better in some of the populous states, and he was doing better with the delegate count. But look, we have this system. This is the nomination system, and my guess is, assuming Hillary Clinton does win, I think a lot of Democrats, including Bernie Sanders supporters, are going to throw their support and enthusiasm for her, especially, you know, when they take a look at who they're about to face.
Even young people?
I think so. I mean, I do think, you know, the positive way to do this, if that's the outcome, is for Sanders and his supporters to harness the energy that they've brought to the table and throw it behind the party. And I think there's ways to do that. Sanders himself will have to be part of that process.
Mm-hmm. And the polls that I'm seeing, and I think it's okay during this time now to start looking at polls, the polls that I'm seeing show that, and the enthusiasm among Republicans, a lot of commentators are making mention of that, many more people are voting in Republican primaries and caucuses than Democratic, indicating maybe Democrats have an enthusiasm problem. The polls I'm seeing show that Sanders does beat Donald Trump in states like Ohio, that Hillary Clinton doesn't fare as well. How does she fare against Donald Trump? How does he fare against Donald Trump?
Well, look, I think the turnout issue is significant. And part of it might be that there's just a lot of Republicans running, so they're each bringing people in a way the Democratic campaign is not. And so some of that could level off in a general election. But if those numbers are true and it reflects overall enthusiasm, it's something Hillary Clinton has to be very concerned about. I think right now there are polls showing Sanders doing well with Donald Trump. Again, that's so hypothetical right now, and I'm not sure what voters are imagining or what they know about each candidate. It's hard to gauge how that would unfold. But I do think this enthusiasm issue is at the heart of one of the problems Hillary Clinton faces, and it is something she needs to address. And it won't be solved simply by attacking Sanders and kind of undercutting what some of his supporters think. She has to offer some ideas and some disposition that does what we said a few minutes ago, excites his supporters to get this turnout up.
So it's the same issue that we heard from Barack Obama in 2008, except which changed a little bit. You're likable enough, Hillary, but maybe she's not likable enough.
Yeah, I mean, it's likable. It's not personal just, though. I mean, there's parts of that in politics, but part of it is there is something about the set of ideas she's putting forward or her record and what she represents in Democratic politics that is not enough for many voters to say, you know, I want to get out there, not just to vote, but to mobilize behind her. And so she needs to, you know, disprove that image of herself. And part of it's unfair in that it's connected to her husband and his record in the party, which not all Democrats loved. But she will need to move beyond that.
Mm-hmm. Next caller is from Tony from Tomahawk. Hi, Tony.
Hi. Basically, the national media has been both lazy and cowardly. Lazy around Clinton. You know, for 25 years, she's been an easy target, so they just keep that going. The cowardly part is that two-thirds of Trump supporters are active supporters of the birther idea, which Trump really championed. So, if, you know, rather than parse all these small demographic groups, look at the birther movement as a source of Trump support.
Well, I don't know if that's the correct percentage. He was a birther. He played to that set of issues about Barack Obama, and that was when he really reemerged on the political scene. And so I'm sure there's elements of the same constituency in his coalition, but right now, you know, from the polls we're seeing in the first few states, it's broader than that. And it's not simply the birthers. And I think Democrats would be a little bit misguided to think, you know, that's all that's at work, as would Republicans who oppose Trump. I think at this point, and we'll see on Super Tuesday, it seems pretty clear that he's drawing a bigger pool of voters. And that's what's giving him this strength. And with Hillary Clinton, it's true. I mean, it is a kind of familiar set of arguments. And one of the challenges she has is we know so much about her, and these arguments have been so out there for so long that she has a campaign where she's constantly talking about who she is not and what she is not. And it's very hard to excite people, and that's the basis of what you're saying.
Well, you know, you said something earlier that is circling around in my mind that I find really sad and kind of troublesome, Professor Zelizer, that one of the reasons that Trump is so successful is that he's so successful on TV. What in the world does that say about us?
Yeah, I think that says more about us than him. And, you know, we often downplay the impact of the media on politics. And so it's not simply that the media is influential, but it's the kind of media we have absorbed and subscribed to in the past few years about reality TV, about clickbait, you know, political discussion, and very contentious and controversial arguments being what we want rather than what we try to avoid. So I do think there is an ugliness, not just in Donald Trump, but it says there's an ugliness in the electorate about how we do our politics that he is thriving on.
Yeah. So are you thriving during this presidential year?
Well, look, all presidential elections, congressional elections, they're interesting. They're still at the heart of our democratic process, regardless of who's running and how they're running. So they're always interesting to study, and they are incredibly important. The stakes
are
very, very high, even if the campaign itself sometimes seems that it's not at our standards.
Mm-hmm. Well, we love having you as a guest. Thank you ever so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Professor Julian Zelizer, Professor of History and Public Affairs at Princeton University. He's the author of The Fierce Urgency of Now, Lyndon Johnson, Congress, and the Battle for the Great Society. Regular contributor to CNN, The Atlantic, The Huffington Post, biographer of Jimmy Carter and other presidents, and really good talker. We like to have him on. So, rest assured, we'll have many more political conversations during this presidential 2016 year. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nalbandian, and this is Wisconsin Public Radio's Winter Membership Drive. We love bringing you political conversations. They are important. Julian Zelizer, one of our favorite guests. Robert Reich, who had been scheduled for today, had to say he couldn't do it this morning, but it looks like he'll be with us on Super Tuesday, former Secretary of Labor. We've just had stellar guests and terrific conversations, and it's your support that makes that happen. So I ask you to give now, WPR.org. 888-202-2552.
Kathleen is 100% right. Your support makes all of these conversations happen for you and for your community. So make your pledge right now, 888-202-2552 or at WPR.org. And remember to reward yourself by choosing the WPR bandana.
Yeah, that's a big hit.
I know.
Those bandanas are big hits.
Yes.
This hour with Julian Zelizer, an example of the really informative and important, this year, important conversations that we have on this show.
So take a few minutes right now, this hour, and many more hours possible. Choose a gift that works for you. Then make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you decide the amount of your pledge. It's true that every pledge really matters, and every pledge helps pay for the programs you enjoy here on Wisconsin Public Radio. And don't forget, you can ask for a set of useful for you and your dog or your cat or whoever, your child, your mother, your father, your grandparents, WPR bandanas.
That's right. And you might be wondering, well, what in the world do those bandanas look like? Well, they look like a traditional like bandana design, and they have a little WPR spin on it. Like there's little headphones and a little record player.
They're really
adorable. Yeah, so you know what? You get a red one, you get a navy one. Show your support for WPR and ask for those bandanas when you give $6 a month or a one-time gift of $72. Do it at WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
I would ask you, if you're a listener, you know, why do you listen? And if you're listening now, then you want to be listening in the future. And if you've listened in the past and the future rolls around and it's not there, you won't have anything to listen to.
And I guess I would tell you that it's NPR and WPR, National Public Radio, Wisconsin Public Radio. And you are its public. And the funding for WPR and NPR comes from you.
I'm Larry.
I'm Ellie.
And we're from Madison, Wisconsin.
And please join us as sustaining members of Wisconsin Public Radio.
I listen to public radio and I'm a sustaining member. That's kind of cool.
That is kind of cool. So make your donation in support of the programs that you count on. WPR.org, 888-202-2552. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nalbandian, and we're just simply asking for your gift to what we do every day to Wisconsin Public Radio during our winter membership drive. Whatever you pledge, $5 a month, $100 a month, every pledge is deeply appreciated.
You connect with Wisconsin Public Radio for conversation, for information, and for entertainment. 9XM leadership gifts of $100 a month or more are critical in supporting that connection for you and everyone else across the state.
Keep our connection strong to you, to all Wisconsin Public Radio listeners, with a leadership gift of $100 a month or more. And you can do that at WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
One of the neatest things I think about radio is this connection with other people.
Absolutely.
When you listen to WPR, you're not alone. I mean, of course, you might be alone, you know, in your car or your home or your office, but you're sharing this experience with so many other listeners.
Absolutely. And listeners who call in and talk with the guests, it's just really a community. We have a lot in common. We share values that bind us together, and your support helps all of us share the cost of WPR programs. Give now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
You can think of your connection to Wisconsin Public Radio as an investment in your future listening. Give us a few minutes of your time and your donation in any amount, and in return, you'll get lots of great programming.
Donate at WPR.org, 888-202-2552. In just a few minutes, you will have made a wise investment, and it pays dividends every single day.
Yep, that's so true. And this pledge drive, we're offering something brand new, first edition. You can show your support for Wisconsin Public Radio with a WPR bandana. So give now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And once again, it's 888-202-2552, WPR.org. Thank you, everybody who has supported us, and to all who will support us, because you're going to go to the phone right now.
Mm-hmm.
And thanks for your contributions to all of our conversations, too. So many guests say, I love your listeners, and I love you, too. You really are just an informed, and it's just great. It's a great job. We all talk about these important issues. Great. Secretary of Labor during the first Clinton administration, Robert Reich, will be with us next week, just to let you know that. And Ted Koppel is joining us, hour two of our program today. Book he has written is Lights Out, A Cyber Attack, A Nation Unprepared, and Surviving the Aftermath. Thanks to Scotty Myers for working really hard this morning, and to Kendra Smith for all of her help in on-air production. And thanks for your pledges and for listening. News is coming up from National Public Radio, and we'll return with more very interesting conversation.